You're listening to Leadership Powered by Common Sense with your host, Doug Thorpe. Here's Doug.
Well, greetings, everyone. This is Doug Thorpe, and you're listening to another episode of Leadership Powered by Common Sense. So we've been having a lot of fun in the studio today, and I have another guest with us. His name is Robert White, and he's over in the Denver area. It tells me he's looking out his window at a gorgeous landscape over there. So, Robert, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Doug. You know, Denver is, contrary to many people that haven't been here, it's flat, but we get this beautiful view of the Rockies.
Oh, yeah.
You're fortunate, like I am, to look to the west.
Well, I'm detecting a little bit of Broncos orange in your shirt there, so I don't know if that was intentional or accidental. But
you know, Doug, part of my story is I end up coming to this town that's football mad, but I grew up in Green Bay, Wisconsin, which, you know, takes the international award for craziness about football.
Oh, no kidding. No kidding.
And it's actually one of the reasons I left kind of a triggering event about the Packers caused me to leave Green Bay and start the journey that I ended up on. So,
oh my, oh, well, maybe we'll save that for another day. I don't know, but let's kind of dive in. I, as has become custom on the show here, I'd like to ask you to describe to me your journey. You know, what kind of path has gotten you to where you are these days?
You know, within my increasing gray hair and less of it, that story gets too long to tell in some ways, but maybe I could focus on some turning points. Certainly one was at about 26, 27 years old, I had spent 10 years violating the votes of my high school graduating class of 300. They named me most likely to succeed, and I proceeded to do everything but succeed. By 26, I had had three heart attacks and was told that I would not live past 35. I had a marriage and divorce that I felt very guilty about, and I had a little sales business that was really struggling. And during that period, a friend of mine who was in a similar business went out to California and went through one of the first human potential movement trainings. He came back and his whole life just changed right in front of my eyes. He told me, Robert, you have to go to this thing. And I, of course, had 1,000 reasons why I should not go. And the more he told me about it, the more I knew I didn't want to go. But then, then I watched him. I watched his business get better, his marriage get better. And this guy had adult onset acne. You know, as a teenager, many of us get that. We think it's the end of the world, but it goes away in a year or at most two.
Yeah.
But if you get it as an adult, it's very difficult to eliminate, I guess. And he had done all kinds of treatments and cortisone, and he'd had his face ground like you grind a drawer front, you know, turned it into that red, like that monkey that you see at the zoo with the red butt. And he's in the sales profession, so it really bothered him. He had tried everything. And about 3 months after he went through this seminar, one of the things that happened, in addition to making more money, just being more fun, is the acne went away. And it just, that did it for me. I said, okay, I'm going to go do this thing.
Wow.
And it sounds like a cliche, Doug, all these years later, but those 4 days changed my life. And I woke up to why I was creating all this trauma in my life, and the chest pain stopped. I forgave myself, just learned something from the divorce, and my business tripled in size that following year, even though there's not a word said in that training about money. And the next year it went up 10 times. And one of the reasons it went up is I started enrolling people in that training. I didn't understand it. I didn't know who was behind it. I knew nothing about it except that it worked. And from that, I got a phone call one day from the founder, whose name I did not know. He introduced himself. thanked me for my support, and then invited me to California. And 10 days later, I was president of Mind Dynamics. So I spent 4 years learning the training business, courtesy of this genius guy. And I got to travel around the world. Just incredible, incredible experience. His partner, 50% shareholder in that company, died in an airplane crash. It sounds really non-business-like, but it broke Alexander Everett's heart, the founder. And he decided to sell out. So he sold the company to the estate of his late partner, who had many, many business interests, that had a lot of assets, but no cash. We had no assets, or almost no assets, and a lot of cash by that time. So they bought us to get access to our money. That turned out to not work for me. So I quit. I formed a company called LifeSpring that's gone on to graduate over 700,000 people from these high-impact experiential learning events. And the event there is that after 6 months, I left my own company. It didn't work for me. And what I learned there, Doug, and you and I have talked about possibly talking about team building here. What I learned in that, in effect, a failure, even though LifeSpring went on to be hugely successful, the idea was good, it was solid. What I learned in that personal failure informs me today in how I think about teams and what's necessary in order to bring people together. So after that, one of the countries I said no to during that 4 years was Japan. They kept calling me. Finally, they made me an offer I could not refuse. They said, come for 3 months, we'll pay you for a year. I'd never had that kind of offer in my life. So I went off to Japan for 3 months and stayed 12 years the first time.
Wow.
And built the largest training company in Asia. We were in 7 centers in Japan, 2 in Taiwan, 1 in Guangzhou, China, 1 in Manila, 1 in Seoul, 1 in Sydney, Australia. And then eventually we opened a corporate culture change practice in the United States, which is my first exposure to living in Colorado, was I eventually moved here. So that large part of my life, big success, retired at 46, moved to Aspen, Colorado, skied 80 days a year, built a 14,500 square foot house, remarried, had 2 wonderful birth children, 2 wonderful adopted special needs kids, spent 6 months traveling with the late John Denver, went to over 40 countries, was on 6 nonprofit boards, an incredible experience in Aspen, and lost control of my company. So that was the next significant event, was almost simultaneously the top 5 people in my company walked out and started their own business. And my wife left me for a lawyer. So that was not a good 3-year period. And so I started over, and I'm glad I did. It's worked out wonderfully. I work with executives that are looking for an extraordinary result. And that's kind of, along the way, I wrote a book that turned into a bestseller, and I've had just a lot of fun.
Well, Robert, I think the big word that's rattling around in my brain right now, hearing your story, is resilience. It's, I forget who was it that said, might have been Lombardi speaking of the Packers. It's not how many times you fall down, but how you get up. And or something to that effect, and it I think that's so true in the real core of the entrepreneurial spirit, is you can go build these things and create these things. I mean, as you were describing your plight, I also was reminded the other day of Steve Jobs got bounced from Apple the first time.
Yes.
So you start something you think is your life's work, and through a series of events, all of a sudden you're asked to never set foot in the premises again. And, what are you going to do about that? Well, Jobs went out and knocked around, did a couple other things, but got his head on straight for what he really needed to be to make Apple what it could become, and landed back there again. So, but there was learning in between. There was growth and there was revelation. And I think that's so much a part of it. And it's, I think, the successful entrepreneur that's willing to take those learning lessons and turn them into something rather than just become bitter. You know, that there's an old phrase where I come from. It's, the question is, you have a bad experience, are you going to be bitter or better?
Those are the choices.
Yeah.
No, I read the Jobs book, and I was alternately disgusted. You know, he had a bunch of bad habits, and just totally inspired. I mean, almost beyond words. But it made me curious, and I surfed around the internet, and I found a video that he did when he was with that company that he created after Apple, Next Computer. Mm-hmm. And they held some kind of a meeting, I think it was in Tahoe or somewhere up in the Sierras. And the video is 30 or 40 minutes long. It's not a short one. And he's sitting around on the floor, and they're all in, you know, just very casual. And he's doing a review of like the first 6 months, I think, of Next, something like that. And it's one of the most incredible videos I've ever seen. And it was really good for me at that time to see that video, to see that this, after I'd read the book and got this mixed impression of him as a human being and as a business genius, organizational genius. And I saw that, like, in depth, the way he was being with people was so inspiring. It opened up possibilities for people. It guided, but with a, you know, he had this kind of reputation for being kind of rough and abrupt with people. But what I saw in that meeting was he created space for people. He was rigorous, but I learned a lot from it. It was a nice experience for me.
Well, Robert, let's shift into the topic of team building a little bit. You obviously had some of those opportunities with the companies you were able to build along the way, and a combination of that practical experience as well as your own training material and so forth. Is there a simple framework that you start with that defines what it means to build a good team?
You know, Doug, in my book, when it was first introduced, you know, they send copies to media people, and then you go on the tour and you get interviewed. And usually somebody other than the interviewer reads the book. You know, the high and mighty don't read the book. They find some grunt to do so. And that grunt comes up with four or five questions for the interviewer to ask. And so I watched that over time. And what was interesting to me is how many people, with no guidance from me or from the PR company, picked up on this one sentence, which was that something I believe pretty strongly, which is that life is simple. This does not mean it's easy. Life is simple. This does not mean it's easy. And I think the same way about answering your question about team building. I think there is a simple framework. It just is not easy. And sometimes it, fortunately, I guess for me in my profession, it requires or demands assistance. I think a smart executive is going to hire somebody like me to help with the process I'm going to talk about. But I mentioned that I had this personal failure with LifeSpring, even though they went on to great success. And what it was based on is that I had spent the 4 years with Mind Dynamics and being a student of Alexander Everett, learning how to do the training and learning more about its meaning and so on. There's an Asian expression, a Zen expression that I like a lot. It's, fish don't describe water very well. Whatever you're swimming in, you know, you don't notice it. And what I didn't notice about Mind Dynamics was something that I later captured and today work with executive teams on, which is, you better know your purpose, your unique reason for existing as a company. You better know your vision, and it better be a compelling one. You know, a picture of the future, not just goals, but a picture of a future state, probably not to be realized in your lifetime. You better be really clear about your core values and be living them and have some mechanisms set up so that you do enforce them, you maintain them. And then finally, that you have a strategic intent. You know, you have some very clear goals that are aligned with your strategy. So in going out and talking with a lot of executives, my clients, but also people at conferences, people that where I'm doing some public speaking, what I find is that if you ask a CEO, are you clear on your purpose, vision, and values, and is your team clear and strategic intent, they always say yes, 100% of the time. And then they'll show you the poster on the wall or the study from McKinsey or Boston Consulting Group,
Bain. Or the binder on their desk.
Oh, I love that binder. And, you know, it's got dust on it, and they pretend they
and there's
they
no read fingerprints it all. On it.
No fingerprints in the dust. Or the coffee cup, the famous coffee cup, yeah. You know, with a slogan on it. You go out and interview the top 20 people, and it's an amazing experience how common it is, Doug. They're individual people, so therefore they're unique. But there's a pattern, and the pattern is they are numb. That's not a very scientific term, but I can make up the reasons for that. Maybe that's not so important, but they're not turned on. My former wife uses an expression I like, which is lights on or lights off. And they are lights off.
Yeah.
And then what we learned to do, I mean, I did those interviews myself at first, but later delegated to other people in the company. And they had this similar experience, because what I learned to do was at the so-called end of the interview to kind of close my notebook and lean back in my chair and say, well, by the way, what do you do after work? And people light up. I'm coaching my daughter's soccer team. We're in third place. I think we've got a chance at winning it all this year. You know, this might sound silly to you, but I've got a model train outfit in my basement, and I work on it three or four nights a week. And I have so much fun with it. And I'm part of a club where we exchange parts and we talk about, oh, and I've got three new locomotives. And there's a long list of those things, but what they're lit up is not their job. I think that's criminal, frankly.
Yeah.
And what I learned was that at My Dynamics, Alexander lived purpose, vision, and values. Unfortunately, he did not speak them. He didn't articulate it, but he lived it. There was no question of what his values were. There was no question about why he was doing what he was doing. There was no question about our vision in terms of supporting, helping people. When I started LifeSpring, I assumed, even though I didn't have those terms, I didn't understand the whole concept, I assumed we were all on the same page. We weren't.
No.
And that I went from almost indescribable joy running My Dynamics to indescribable pain running my own company, because I was missing those key aspects. And with medium-sized and larger companies, there is so much pressure on the CEO and on the top team. And, you know, it's, I don't like to, in a way, my ego does not like to quote Stephen Covey, the late Stephen Covey, but, you know, he talks about that distinction between urgent and important.
Yeah.
You know, and people get caught up in urgent. And I understand that. I lived it in building my own company. I mean, eventually we had 240 people and 70 full-time trainers. We had, we're operating in 15 locations in seven countries. It was intense. And there was always an emergency, something urgent.
Yeah.
But what I had learned to do and what contributed to the incredible growth of our company and now is contributing to the growth of my clients is that you make it a priority to pay attention to the, first of all, the creation of purpose, vision, and values statements that are clearly articulated and lived. And then you maintain them, you enforce them, you stay connected to them. And you celebrate them. You celebrate people that are operating in alignment with it. So that's kind of my approach to team building, is that things are moving so fast today in organizations and in the greater culture. The changes are awesome, and they're coming at us. And, you know, we kind of focus on technology changes. They're so obvious and they do affect us and we notice them. But the changes in family life, the changes in community involvement, the changes in how you work in cooperation and collaboration with others, more and more. There's just so many changes that there's no way you could manage all that. You can only lead it.
Right.
And it's about, from my perspective, it's about forcing leadership down through the organization, so that people don't have to check with the boss about everything, and that there's more truth telling, that there's more.
I like that. Yeah. I just recently did an interview with a gentleman who had the joy of building $100 million brand, he and two other partners, and happened to be in the restaurant business, ultimately creating 30 restaurants in this network of business. And his whole theme was, it was all purpose driven. And it started with the three partners having a very earnest effort to nail down the purpose, values, and visions that they wanted to create for this restaurant enterprise. And, you know, it did have to do with what value was going to be on the plate. It wasn't so much the quality of the china or the thread count in the linen tablecloth that mattered. It was the value on the plate, and they wanted it priced at a level that people could come back three nights a week if they wanted to, and it would be, you know, economically viable to do that. So, as you know, the food business goes, that those might be polar opposite elements, the high value on the plate and a cost that allows you to go out there three nights a week. But they pulled it off. And, you know, he described a very detailed process of how they implemented those values and got them pushed down through the organization, starting with the hiring practices and screening and vetting of people to, as Jim Collins said, you don't get the right people on the bus to make those things live. Because let's face it, even if you do the work on creating a great vision, if you can't find the right people that will align with that vision, you know, maybe they've got their own moral challenges or value challenges in their own life that just won't allow them to line up with that. Doesn't make them bad people. I'm just saying it's different. You've got to be careful with that. And
yes.
So a lot of effective team building starts with a good articulation of the standards that then you can hire toward that standard and create that alignment of vision and get everybody going.
You know, the late Peter Drucker is kind of known as the father of modern management, and I don't pretend to be an expert about management, but I do know a bit about leadership. And Drucker is credited for having said this, but I believe other people had said it before he did, and that is that culture eats strategy for breakfast, that your culture, how people are feeling, the way things are done around here, you know, that very simple definition of culture, the way things are done around here, how choices are made. Increasingly, particularly because of the net, that is more and more known about your company. And with the struggle to get the best and brightest today, those best and brightest are not just grabbing your job because the salary looks good or the title looks good. They're checking you out around culture. They want to know if you are walking your talk. And you can do that online now.
Right.
Or they'll do it by networking or through social media. And if you are operating kind of the old command and control way of leading, increasingly young people don't want to be there. The best people don't want to be there. So in hiring, in firing, you know, what's your filter? What's the standard? that you're looking for. You know, that I was thinking that I think I want to get one of those programs with a whiteboard on it, because I can't talk anymore without a whiteboard or a flip chart. And, you know, that's the consultant's disease. But, you know, there's a simple graphic where one axis is results, certainly important in every business, and the other axis is values. So if you've got somebody that's low on results and low on values, you throw a little party for them and it's a separation party. And thanks for stopping by, but this is clearly not the place for you.
Yeah.
If they are high on values and low on results, that's where coaching and training comes in. You know, you can train skills, and so you can develop that person. If they're high on results and high on values, those are your superstars. And yeah, you have to be willing to pay them more. You have to give them more recognition. You have to give them more exposure, maybe internationally or maybe in a different product line. You know, you test them in different ways, but you do that in the context of, I'm doing this so I can further develop a superstar. And by the way, I'm going to pay them more, no matter what everybody else says.
Right.
The tricky one, of course, is low on values and high on results. What the guy at the University of Michigan that created this said was, that's the quadrant for a public making. Not only do you fire that person, but you make sure everybody knows why.
Yeah.
That the violation of values has to be, because what I found out in my own company is, when you have somebody that's not performing and particularly not living the values, everybody knows. And they judge the leader for not getting rid of that person.
That's right.
And it's a pretty savage, unspoken judgment. And they start pulling their focus, their alignment, their commitment, because they think, what's wrong with the boss that he's putting up with this pain in the butt, you know,
yeah,
and making my job harder and making me less proud of being here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that kind of attention to culture, instead of just what's urgent, you know, what's pressing on you. I think that's the mark of a 21st century leader.
I like that idea. And I tell you what, Robert, on that note, we're going to park it for just a moment, take a short commercial break. And when we come back from the break, we're going to dive more into the whole idea of effective team building with this purpose-driven values set in mind. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Business is all about solving complex problems as fast as you can create them. Become the best problem solver by leading others to greatness too. And the first step is going to DougThorpe.com. Doug Thorpe is known globally for coaching entrepreneurs and business leaders, improving their performance and the work output of everyone surrounding them. You can find health, wealth, and happiness by learning to lead others to health, wealth, and happiness. Go to DougThorpe.com now and order Doug's books or hire him to coach your managers. That's Doug, T-H-O-R-P-E.com.
Well, we're back, everyone. Thank you for hanging in and listening to us. I am visiting with Robert White. We've been talking a little bit about team building, and he shared some great stories about his own journey in the business world and experiences helping others develop teams and develop culture in their companies. Robert, when we took the break, we were talking about the culture phenomenon, and I'm curious about one thing. You mentioned 12 years over in Japan and the Asia region. Just real quick, kind of, I guess I'll call it for the record, how do you contrast the business culture mindset over there versus what we see in, I'll say, the North American continent?
Well, there are distinct, I've lived abroad, lived in Asia 23 years of my working life, and I've traveled there the years that I was living in Aspen or elsewhere. It's been a 40-year career in Asia. And first of all, I'd say that from here, we tend to lump Asia into Asia. But the distinction between China and Japan and Taiwan and Hong Kong and Malaysia and so on, they're really distinct cultures. The piece I think that has something to do in terms of contrast is that we live in a country, the United States, that was founded by rebels, by revolutionaries, by people questioning the status quo. Most of Asia, the people are waiting for direction from above. And I remember being in Japan during that time when, you know, they were coming up with these crazy comparisons that one square meter of land in the Imperial Palace grounds in the middle of Tokyo was worth more than all of Manhattan, or, you know, crazy statements like that. And there was some truth in them, but it's kind of like, so what? And people were trying to encourage me to come back to the U.S. and give lectures about Japanese management and how America needed to change. And my statement was, America is not Japan. You can't, speaking of the overriding culture of Japan. So as an example, in our trainings, we redesigned our trainings in Asia, because in America, our kind of experiential learning event for executives, you have to spend the first half day gaining control of the room. Because yeah. All these independent egos and very successful people are piping up and they're testing you, you know, to see if they can grab control of the room, because then they feel more safe. And in Asia, it's just the opposite. You have to do things experientially to get people involved right away, because their culture is to sit back and wait to be told how to think and what to do. And so cultures do make a difference. Now, I'm skipping forward maybe on a 5-day university course, but underneath, we're all the same. We care about our families. We care about accomplishment. We care about doing good work and being acknowledged for it, being part of something great. So underneath that cultural layer, we're the same. But if you don't pay attention to the cultural layer, you don't get to deal with what's underneath it.
Yeah. Let me just interject. I've always been a fan of introducing, or at least having a discussion with a leader that I'm coaching, talk about the Maslow's hierarchy for your people, because somewhere we're all fundamentally wired. We have a basic need for our own physical safety. We cannot operate if we're fearful of our very existence. And so you're talking about food and shelter as that basic rung. And then you come up a level and you still have that need for a little bit of tribal connection and association from a societal standpoint. And it's only then can you start thinking about these aspirational ideas of high quality of work, high level of performance, and all these other things. And I think too often leaders and managers in particular forget that. And they just say, well, you clocked in, dude, you're mine, let's go to work. And that's not necessarily true every day of the week.
Look, if you treat people that, look, do this because you're getting a paycheck, then you're going to get people that are working for the paycheck. Right. You know, you can they'll go down Maslow's pyramid just more rapidly than they go up it, is another way to say that. If depending on how they're treated, on the space that they're in, right. People do have an affiliation need. You know, that middle part of Maslow's pyramid. We are social animals. We're spending 1/3 of our lives roughly working, and so. Those relationships are really super important. Relationship with the boss, relationship with your subordinates, relationship with your peers. Those relationships are super important because they're fulfilling an essential need, according to Maslow and according to my experience. Asking people to move out of just affiliation into excellence, that's really the kind of the, you know, if you want to be a great leader, that's the inspirational job, is to bring people from, okay, everyone's part of here and you're safe and you're making a decent living. All right, we've got the bottom three parts of that 5-part pyramid. Now, what are we going to do together to express excellence, to express, you know, my word is extraordinary, to be extraordinary, to be, to fulfill our purpose, to be moving steadily toward our vision, and to be living our values.
Yeah.
And there is nothing, you know, in my experience, there is nothing like being with a team of people with a big challenge and pulling it off, you know, creating a success with it.
Let's put a man on the moon.
Yeah. And a whole nation kind of came together around that, even though it would be hard to find anybody in your neighborhood even that had anything to do with it, but we all felt part of it. That's great leadership. Yeah. And but this whole piece around trust, you know, my father bought a new Chevrolet every 2 years, all the time I was growing up. The same ugly green color and the same car. He bought just the new model of the same car.
He had ugly green back then. I remember those.
And it was the same salesman and the same dealer. What? So that there was all kinds of trust in that relationship. What about today? You know, who buys the car from the same, even the, just the same dealer? It's rare, you know, and you're checking things out online. You're getting opinions on social media. You're reading reviews from all over, or even all over the world. You're looking at repair statistics. It's a completely different thing. But people still do business with those that they know, like, and trust. And how can you create that trust with your clients? How can you create that kind of trust with your peers, your team, with your boss, with your subordinates? That it's a different challenge today, but the outcome is the same, or it better be the same. You better be adding to your trust account, because generally the additions are minor, step by step by step. The withdrawals, when you have to make them, usually are pretty severe. Right. You can lose trust much, much faster than you gain it. So I think one of the, like, this is kind of my personal criticism of business schools. They're not paying enough attention to how to be with people in such a way that trust gets built. There's a lot of, you know, attention to finance and strategy and competitive advantages and all that. And I don't question the need for a deeper understanding of business structure and process, but if you don't learn how to build trust, and in terms of your own behavior, how to gain it and keep it, and a knowledge of, if I'm going to make a withdrawal, if I'm going to do something that threatens my trust in this, in within my company, within my family, within with my customers, I better do it consciously and know that it's, I'm going to pay a price for it. Now, maybe what I'm up to makes it worth paying that price. But having that kind of an awareness in a leadership team is crucial.
I too have that same observation and sort of long time view of, number one, the need to have trust in the work environment across a team of people and maybe between teams. What I've learned, and I've actually, with a colleague, we've turned it into our own program that we've had some good success with. And at the heart of the program is this same idea: take a page out of your own life experience. And I'll use the example of trying to find a mate. So you go through a process, you identify somebody, and you go, I have an interest in that person. Let me reach out and see if they would like to go do something. And, you know, you have a date, you know, they call it. So what are you really doing most of the time on those dates? You're ultimately asking questions. You're probing. You're poking around, getting to the truth of how this person thinks, how they view the world, what sort of values do they possess, and do those, all of those things align with your own? And once you find this sort of master alignment, a light bulb goes off and you say, oh, I think I can live the rest of my life with that person. Now, we all know other things happen, and you and I both have shared the divorce experience. So, you know, it's not a foolproof system. But nonetheless, there's something at the core of that. And I argue that for leaders in a business, the same principles apply, but here's how it's a little bit different. Employees show up. They're the ones showing up with questions. They're asking, you know, what are we doing? Where are we going? How are we going to get there? What are the tools I've got? What, you know, who's the guy to the left of me? Who's the guy to the right of me? How is this all going to come together? And the leader needs to create an environment where those questions can get handled.
They can be spoken.
They can be addressed. You might not have 100% perfect answer for all the questions, but you've got an answer that is the truth for what's going on.
Yes.
And at that point, the person can make the decision. And one of my sets of questions centers around the idea, do I even want to be here?
That's and, a pretty important one.
A pretty important question. And it's intuitive. You would think if somebody has accepted a job, but how often do we hear the story? Somebody accepts a job, they get clocked in for the first day, and quickly they realize, oh, this isn't at all what they told me it was going to be. And I'm out. I'm done. I'm gone.
You know, I had the experience of buying a jet, and it's kind of the joke with a jet or a yacht or anything like that. It's like the best day is the day you bought it, you know, and it's all downhill after that.
The next best day is the day you sell it.
And the best next day is the day you sell it. But look, if I don't have an ability to connect with another human being, because, you know, everything we do is with people. It's not independent. I mean, we are, speaking of culture, we're pretty independent culture here in the United States.
Yeah.
But sometimes that gets carried a little too far, and we forget that every single thing we do, especially anything that's new, a new product, a new way of marketing it, a geographic expansion, you know, the list goes on and on. Anything that's new requires other people's buying in, and they're not going to buy in if that trust level is not high. I've worked with and for people, you know, back to the Alexander Everett days, who were geniuses at creating trust. And it's a wonderful environment that gets built around people like that. And you want to do more. You want to exceed. You want to please that person. You want to earn their trust. And magic happens.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And when you get together with people that you worked with 20 years ago, doing something of value and with some challenges, maybe even with some failure included in it, those relationships persist forever, in my experience.
Yeah.
That what the trust that gets built is so deep because they know what they can count on from you. You know what you can count on from them. And there's this alignment toward creating something of value. It doesn't get much better than that in life.
No, I agree. And I agree. And on that note, Robert, I think we're going to bring this one to a close. This has been great and a big help. And I certainly believe people will find value in all this. Before we get off, tell everybody how they might get a hold of you if they're wanting to connect and get a little more information.
Well, my website's the best way, and that's extraordinarypeople.com. My book is available there or on Amazon and Kindle and all those things. But one of the things I offer, Doug, is I do a weekly email. I've been doing it for more than 10 years. Several thousand people are subscribed. It's called an Extraordinary Minute. It's somebody else's wisdom, usually. Could be a line from a song or a poem or a saying or a short paragraph. And then a few comments from me, all designed to be read in 1 minute or less once a week. And included in that is everything, kind of a summary of what I've learned about personal growth, but also organizational growth. And it's a 28-page PDF. It's free. It's shareable. and I encourage you to do so, or our viewers. And so it's my way of beginning a relationship, which might go someplace and it might not. Probably like you, I'm easily reachable. I love spending 30 minutes with somebody on some kind of an issue so we can get to know each other. That's kind of how I operate.
So, I like it. I like it. Well, we will have those links in the show notes here if you didn't catch them on the fly there. And I want to remind everybody, if you're listening to the audio version of this through your favorite streaming service, we do have a video version over on YouTube at same show title, Leadership Powered by Common Sense. And please consider jumping over there, subscribing to the video, and that way you'll get notices of our releases every week. Actually, we're doing two episodes a week now, so stay tuned and strap in, right? So one last time, Robert, thanks again for being here.
You're more than welcome. What a great pleasure, Doug.
Really enjoyed it, and thank you for doing this. So, folks, we're going to wrap this one up. You have been listening to another episode of Leadership Powered by Common Sense. It's been a pleasure serving you and working with you, and for now, we're going to say goodbye.
You've been listening to Leadership Powered by Common Sense, hosted by Doug Thorpe. If you would like to know more about the coaching and advisory services he provides, visit DougThorpe.com.